I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
KSL's unrivaled, the teams you live for, the sports you love. Scott Mitchell and Alex Carey on KSL News Radio.
Hey, welcome on in. KSL's unrivaled. Mitch Harper filling in for Alex Carey today. And joining me, my Cougar Sports Saturday co-host, Matt Biamonte, filling in for Scott Mitchell. So some Cougar Sports Saturday flair. It's not just going to be BYU talk, though. We're going to hit on the Utes. We're going to hit on NFL talk, all the usual topics we get to here on Unrivaled. So, Matt, how you doing tonight?
Doing great, Mitch. And what a weekend of sports. I mean, the NFL was crazy. I mean, what we saw in the NFL was nuts. We're going to get to that. College football was crazy as well. It's glad to be here on a Monday recapping a wonderful weekend of sports.
Yeah, we got to start things off, though, with the Utah game up at Washington. There's a lot to hit on this Utah team who starts out the season 0-2, and that's where we're going to get off in the cut.
The Cut at 7:05. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
Yeah, the cut always brought to you by WasatchMedicalClinic.com. Go to visit WasatchMedicalClinic.com today. Utah falls to Washington 24-21. They blew a 21-0 lead that they had at the half. It was the first time Washington had come back from that large of a deficit at the half since like 1988. It's been a long time since Utah, too, has started a season 0-2, first time since 2007. Matt, how did this happen, and how is Utah suddenly this program that's winless beyond Thanksgiving?
Well, those are two separate questions, Mitch. I'll address the first one. How did this happen? I think it's pretty simple. Four turnovers. You had two fumbles lost. One of them, a critical turnover by the freshman Ty Jordan in the red zone, in which Utah may have been able to get some of that momentum back in the second half. That one really hurt. When you have four turnovers, I know Washington had three interceptions, but when you have four turnovers, a couple in the second half as well, that's difficult. And then I think the other thing that has been kind of interesting to watch so far for Utah, Mitch, and I'm curious how you feel about this, I just don't feel like the back half of their defense has been as good as we have typically seen in years past under Kyle Whittingham. That secondary gave up a couple big plays. It just doesn't seem like Utah has that typical defense they can rely on. And when you're up 21-0 at the half, yes, the offense did not do what they needed to do in the second half. No one is disputing that. But when you're up 21-0, you'd like to think your defense could carry you home, which Utah has done so often. I mean, they haven't had a great offense in what seems like ever under Kyle Whittingham, but their defense slipping, I think, has been one of the most notable things to me.
Yeah, you kind of wonder, too, if there's still a little bit of a hangover in the program from that loss to Oregon last year. I mean, Utah right now as a program is currently on a four-game losing streak dating back to that Pac-12 championship game. I mean, a year ago at this time, Utah was knocking on the door of the college football playoff. It was kind of win and you're in type of scenario, and Utah got to that big stage. And ever since, there's just been a lot of issues in the program, some of it due to the Pac-12 conference and their handling of COVID-19, but it's just been a kind of herky-jerky last 12 months for Utah that hasn't had many positive returns. And I think also, too, Matt, the issue for Utah, the quarterback play. Tyler Huntley last year was fantastic in terms of efficiency, completion percentage, never turning the ball over.
Yep.
Jake Bentley, as a grad transfer who had a ton of experience in the SEC, you're seeing why Cam Rising ended up winning that job and why he would have been the starter had he not got hurt against USC. Bentley goes 16-23 for 144 yards and two interceptions. And the turnovers, as you noted, definitely had Kyle Whittingham fired up in the postgame after the Utes fall to the Huskies.
We talked the entire halftime about coming out and approaching the game as if this was 0-0, and then there was 30 minutes left, and the game was far from over, and all the coach speak that you can muster at halftime. And we came out and simply stopped making plays, and the turnovers are the biggest difference in the game. I mean, that's five turnovers last week, four this week. That's nine in 2 weeks. That's got to be as many as anyone in the country.
Uncharacteristic things happening in Whittingham's program, because I think you'll come into the season. Utah in the preseason was it was a top 25 team by the AP voters, because I think everyone just thought, okay, young players, talented, heralded recruits, four-star guys across the field, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You kind of thought they would hang their hat on things that have been kind of calling cards for Utah's program, not coughing up the ball, giving their offense a chance to win a game with the defense making big plays, but just has been a lot of mistakes from Utah. And I think that's been one of the surprising things that I've taken away through these first 2 weeks, Matt.
And you brought up Cam Rising, Mitch, and we didn't see much of him, so I don't want to pour on the guy too much, but he didn't look great when he played either. So I think what you said about Tyler Huntley is a great point, and it's really not a surprise. When you think about college football and you think about BYU and the success they're having, Zach Wilson is having one of the best years a BYU quarterback has had. I mean, probably this decade for sure, but maybe over the last 20 or 30 years, and the top teams that are in contention for the college football playoff, you're talking Clemson, they've got Trevor Lawrence. You got Justin Fields. Notre Dame's having a great year. Guess what they have? Great quarterback play from Ian Book. And so, yes, Jake Bentley hasn't been good. Cam Rising, though, I want to pump the brakes a little bit just because that we didn't see much. But what we did see, I didn't come away thinking, whoa, this dude's going to light college football on fire. I'm not sure Utah has a quarterback in the program right now that's going to take them to the level they want to be. And man, it's when you think about next season, because I think Utah, at this point, they're already looking forward to 2021. Are they going to have positive momentum going into that season? They maybe only play, what, four games, five games? And you don't, the quarterback situation won't be settled. Maybe Jake Bentley graduates. It's just has not gone the way Utah wants it to go. And now I'm a little concerned. Is that going to carry over into 2021?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Cam Rising will be the guy, obviously, at quarterback.
He'll be the guy. I just don't know if he's going to take them to where they want to go. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that there's a valid argument to that just because he hasn't played much. But I think there's a lot of positivity. I mean, you hear from a lot of people that follow Utah extensively that he's a good leader. He's someone that's well-liked in that locker room. So I think those are some positive things. I think that was one of the reasons why he won. And they'll get Peter Castelli, a heralded four-star quarterback out of California, coming into the program as well. That's one of the reasons why they haven't really pursued Jackson Dart from Corner Canyon much, because they got Castelli, who they're really high on and think could maybe, you know, compete right away and push the guys that are in the building next year for Utah. But I think, you know, ultimately I think everyone looked at Utah once the Pac-12 had all these stipulations with COVID-19, and the Pac-12 had this late start, and then Utah had the two games canceled due to COVID-19. I think it just became an opportunity to give young players reps and opportunity to play this season, and you're seeing that. I mean, Nate Ritchie from Lone Peak High School, he's going to be fantastic. He's, to me, the next Marcus Williams for Utah at safety. He's got a ton of potential, and I know that, you know, BYU recruited him extensively, and they were hoping and praying they could have got a guy like Ritchie. He's got a strong relationship with Morgan Scalley. He had seven tackles in only his second career college game. He's going to be a bright spot. I think also at running back for Utah,
yes.
I think Ute fans got to be pretty excited about Ty Jordan. He's got a lot of similarities to Zach Moss in his style, the way he runs. He's going to be a good one. He had 97 yards for the Utes.
He did have that costly fumble, but I agree with you. Ty Jordan has been a bright spot, and And, you know, I think Brant Keithy and the tight end group has looked good. Brian Thompson had a nice touchdown reception for Utah. So there's certainly talent there. But, man, it's just when you lose 21 to nothing, which, you know, Utah hasn't done that, as you mentioned, in quite a long time. 0-2 for the first time since 2007. That's tough. And I think it's been a while where Utah has had such an extended period of time. Because you mentioned, is there maybe a hangover from that Pac-12 championship game a year ago? That's a year ago. I mean, I can't believe I just said that. That's a year ago. There just has not been any positive news going forward in a year. And you wonder, is that something that you can flip the switch quickly? Because, and the reason I highlight this again, they do have the talent, but they don't have the experience. And is four games where maybe you go 1-3, 2-2, is that enough? Is that a big enough period of time to get that experience you need going into 2021? That remains to be seen, but this was a good opportunity for Utah, I think, to get back on the right foot and to lose the game in the fashion in which they did. It's concerning is not the right word, because Utah is not going to the Pac-12 championship game. They're not going to a New Year's Six game. They're certainly not going to the college football playoff, but you want to build some momentum going into 2021, and they only have a few more opportunities to do that.
Yeah, I think Oregon State this Saturday becomes a much tougher than expected game before the schedule was announced. I think when the crossover game was announced being Oregon State, you thought, oh, that's an easy win. But now the Beavers are coming off a victory over Oregon this past weekend in a hotly contested rivalry game. So that's going to be a tough matchup for the Utes. The Pac-12, both Oregon State and Colorado heading down the stretch for the Utes, tougher than expected game. So yep. This could be a season where Utah, if they can't get it turned around in a hurry, they could be winless. And they got to hope that maybe that still the experience for these youngsters can pay off down the road. Got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll get to some BYU talk. Also, and BYU's ranking in the college football playoff. This is KSL's Unrivaled, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back in to KSL's Unrivaled. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper from Cougar Sports Saturday holding down the fort here. No Alex Keery, no Scott Mitchell. Glad to be with you here on a Monday following a big sports weekend. And, man, we have already talked about the Utes and kind of what went wrong there against Washington. But there were some other interesting games. One that really comes to mind, Mitch, our beloved Fighting Reese Davises, Northwestern. I did not see that coming. Northwestern drops a game to Michigan State, which I don't think a lot of people saw. You know, last week, Mitch, the initial college football rankings came out, BYU at 14. Northwestern was at 8. People were talking like, well, they don't have a lot of games left before the Big Ten championship game. Can they sneak into the playoff? That's gone. Now you have to wonder, do they fall behind BYU? Is that an opportunity for BYU to move forward? And I guess my question to you, Mitch, is two-part question, which I'm not normally a fan of the two-part question, but I think it makes sense here. Part one, where do you believe that BYU should be ranked? And part two, maybe more interesting, where do you think BYU will fall tomorrow night?
Well, I think BYU should be number six.
Six?
I think they should absolutely be that high in the playoff rankings. I mean, BYU is better than Cincinnati. They're better than Georgia. They're better than Miami, which, by the way, I would have loved BYU and Miami playing on Saturday night. Goodness gracious, BYU put the feelers out there to the ACC and to Miami to get that game to happen. But sadly, Florida State had to punt on the season due to COVID, basically. And now Miami's going to be playing Duke instead of a primetime, nationally televised matchup against Miami, which would have been incredible, I think, for both teams. I think that they deserve to be as high as six, BYU. Where I think they'll end up coming up on tomorrow night's rankings, I don't see them moving up really at all.
What?
Maybe at most 13. They're not the playoff committee is not impressed with BYU, and the Cougars had a bye week. They're not going to be bullied by the media saying, oh, how did the playoff committee watch this. This is asinine that BYU's not in the top 10. It is asinine, but the playoff committee doesn't care. They don't have to answer to these people. They can move the goalposts however they see fit to fit their narrative. BYU will barely move up, maybe to 13, if at all. Wouldn't be surprised if they continue to stay at 14 in tomorrow's rankings. What about you?
I'd like to see them be at 8, same ranking as where they are. I don't think BYU has a robust enough schedule, and I know it's not their fault, but it is what it is. I don't think they have a good enough schedule to be really in the college football playoff discussion. But 14 puts them at the Frisco Bowl. That puts them at the New Mexico Bowl. That would be a slap in the face to a BYU team that has done all that you can ask them to do in a year in which they couldn't control hardly anything. And they have far exceeded anyone's expectations, even with a lighter schedule. Which, side note, Mitch, the strength of schedule is not as bad as you might think it is. It's not great, but it's not like 110th. I mean, it's what, 81, depending on where you look? I mean, there's a lot of different metrics you can look at, but bottom line is BYU deserves to be squarely in an at-large situation for a New Year's Six bowl game. And so I think with Northwestern falling out, that's an automatic spot. And I actually think the committee, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're a little smarter than we give them credit for. I'm going to say they moved to 12, making them eligible, and then we'll have to see what BYU can do the rest of the year. I'm glad you brought up the BYU-Miami situation. I'm having a hard time understanding why the ACC, the Big 12, Liberty even, why these teams aren't jumping at the chance to play BYU, because BYU is that Cinderella story of college football this year. Maybe Notre Dame, but I don't think so. I think it's BYU being where they're at, especially in the AP and coaches poll. Why wouldn't you say, you know, I know we could play Duke, but why would we do that? We could. It's better for the conference if we beat BYU. Then we move up a couple spots, and if, you know, if we find a way to get to the ACC championship game, then who knows what can happen. It just blows my mind that people aren't jumping at the opportunity to play BYU, and I mean Power 5 teams. At the beginning of the year, I understood it. You didn't know what was going on, the pandemic. You're trying to figure it out. But we're way beyond that. Everyone is committed to finishing the season, and now BYU is a top 10 football team. Someone play them on national TV. It would be huge ratings, and it would help either team move up the college football playoff rankings. It doesn't make sense, Mitch.
It doesn't make sense. I think the issue is these conferences. I think the individual teams, I guarantee the Miami players, if you ask them, they would have said prime time against BYU any day over some boring game on ACC Network against Duke. I mean, that's a bigger trap game for Miami, who's in a position right now that would clinch the Orange Bowl bid. That's a bigger landmine potentially, because if you lose that game to Duke, you're going to fall out of the Orange Bowl spot. Yep. Whereas you play BYU, you can only basically move up. If you lose, it doesn't hurt your status in the conference rankings in the ACC. I think, again, it's these conferences. They don't want to let BYU into the party, because ultimately BYU would have had a lot to gain playing a team like Miami. And Tom Holmoe even put it out there on social media. He's put out the feelers. He's got, you know, the former ESPN executive Dave Brown, who's working with Gridiron. They're doing everything they can to get games. Like, BYU is doing all they can, and for whatever reason, these conferences just won't have it. They're not letting BYU play these games. You know, maybe on the back end of this week, if the Pac-12 teams have some issues with COVID-19 and there's an odd number of teams that are available to play this weekend, maybe BYU can be like San Diego State was last weekend and slide into a game. BYU practiced today. They're going to practice this week and prepare like maybe a game could happen. So we'll see. But I think that these conferences just don't have the appetite to give a team outside the power conferences another shot at getting a big payday when we're in a climate of college sports right now where everyone financially is struggling and they want to keep the money in-house and keep it with these big athletic departments that spend so much money than the money they pull in.
And before the season began, I could understand that position from a conference's point of view. BYU's not ranked. What do we have to gain? Fast forward to now, what do you have to gain? You play the number 14 team in the country by the CFP rankings, an undefeated team. You have a chance to burst the bubble of the Cinderella of college football. You have a chance to have, you know, in the case of Miami, too, Duke, give me a break. I mean, you have a chance to have BYU come to you, because that's BYU would be willing to do that. They'd fly to Miami. That game is on, I don't know, if it's not on ABC, it's certainly on ESPN. And then it benefits the conference, because if Miami wins the football game, they're shooting up the rankings because it's a top 10 win. It's just, It's frustrating, and it's, you know what's also frustrating is why can't the television partners who give these conferences so much money put their foot down and say, we pay you guys hundreds of millions of dollars, you're playing this football game!
because we need to get some money back,
so I don't care what you think, you're playing BYU on December 5th! It's frustrating that the television partners aren't more involved to get better games.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Matt, because I think anyone in college football would tell you, BYU and Miami, sign me up. Just as a football fan, anyone would love to watch that matchup, how good of a game that could have been. And I'll tell you what, Matt, I think BYU could have smoked Miami. I think BYU could have beat them by about two touchdowns. That's how confident I am about this BYU team. And you could say, oh, that's being a homer, all this and that. Like, look at the data, the analytics of BYU. They're dominating their opposition. This football team's legit. I hope and pray they get the opportunity, whether it be in a bowl game or in the regular season, to prove themselves against a Power 5 brand, because this team, this program deserves it. I guarantee you they would deliver if the stage was provided to them this season. Got to take a break. The show is rolling along. You can get at us on KSLSports.com. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, filling in for Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell. Back on their side with some NFL talk next here on KSL's Unrivaled. All right, welcome back in. KSL's Unrivaled. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte, filling in for Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell this evening. Hope you're having a fantastic Monday night. Some Monday night football taking place right now. The Seahawks and the Eagles in action. Seahawks currently lead the Eagles 14-0 with about 2.5 minutes to go in the second quarter. And Matt, the NFL has been maybe the one professional sport, in my opinion, that has just felt kind of normal. The viewing experience as someone who watches a lot of NFL games on television, it's felt like most years when watching NFL games, it's even amidst the pandemic, where the NBA, Major League Baseball, it all just clearly felt a little bit different. NFL, though, has not, but the NFL has taken some hits, like all sports this weekend, with COVID-19 issues. The NFL has, with their Broncos quarterback situation, they had a team without a quarterback this past weekend in the Broncos-Saints game. It was a mess to watch for the Denver Broncos.
That was an ugly, ugly football game. Denver couldn't do anything offensively. The Saints, which we'll get to more in the show, their offense had some issues as well. But I actually like that the NFL made them play the football game, because I feel, Mitch, and look, I wasn't there. I'm just responding to what I know. If more facts come out, then I'll change my opinion. But based on what we know, it sounds like there was a lapse in protocol by the Denver quarterbacks. Now, you do have to give them a little bit of credit. It's a young group. They tried to go in on an off day to get some work done. Problem is, they went into the facility and then they didn't wear their masks. They were loose with it. And then Jeff Driscoll, their third string quarterback, tested positive. And then because of the contact tracing, none of the quarterbacks were able to play. And under those circumstances, I think it is correct of the NFL to have said, too bad, you're playing the football game. Because if you had done what we had asked, even if Jeff Driscoll had tested positive, if you had worn masks and contact tracing wasn't a problem, then you could have played Drew Lock, or, you know, worst case scenario, Blake Bortles is on the practice squad. You can elevate him to play. And what made this really tricky, too, is when the test became positive, it was so late in the week, Mitch, that they weren't able to just go and sign somebody and throw him into the mix. And I feel bad for Kendall Hinton, because he did not have a good game, but that was an impossible situation. He gets no practice time. And something that I also find interesting about the way that they used him, it's like Hinton had never played football before. He was in on a couple plays, and they were super, I think it was like one read type stuff, and a lot of the times the pressure came flying through the gaps, and he was just throwing the football up. I mean, in that situation, you just say, go play football. It just seemed like they tried to scheme a little too much. And again, impossible situation. But now I'm rambling. But I'm glad that Denver had to play the football game, because the NFL has protocols in place. And if you don't follow them, but the game can still be played, that's on you. And that's what happened to Denver.
Yeah, Denver, for those that missed it over the weekend, Denver, one of their quarterbacks, Jeff Driscoll, tested positive for COVID-19. And then the other quarterbacks, Drew Lock, Blake Bortles, Brett Rippon, they were all considered high-risk exposures due to being around Jeff Driskel, and they were around him without wearing masks. Now, going forward, obviously the Broncos lost that game to the Saints, and it was a mess offensively. They couldn't do anything with the wide receiver turned quarterback in Kendall Hilton. The Denver head coach, Vic Fangio, was asked today about possibly disciplining those quarterbacks for failing to wear masks when they should have been. And he added that a fine was probably more likely than a suspension. Do you think it's fair to fine his players over this?
No, I don't think.
Even not wearing a mask? They should have been wearing a mask, man. They should have been taking care of their business. What are they doing?
I wouldn't hurt them financially. This is crazy. We're living in a pandemic, Mitch. We're living in a pandemic, and I feel like the team already paid the price. They had to play a football game without a quarterback.
That's true.
And they got killed. I think if there's anything to learn from this, it is don't let people into the facility on off days, even if the best of intentions are there, because coaching staff and other people aren't there to drive home the protocols. And number two, and this is where I've always had a problem with this. Why is an NFL roster so small? Because I feel like the roster should be at least 65 players, and then everyone could carry three or four quarterbacks, and then you just say one of you is participating via Zoom all week long in case there's an outbreak. If the rosters were bigger, you could stash the third and fourth string people remotely, and they can participate in meetings, and they can, you know, they won't get to go to practice and play around, but they can in their backyard throw the football around. I mean, I feel like these guys are in shape and can figure out a way to play, but it's crazy that some of these rosters are so small, especially in a pandemic year where this can even happen. It's crazy.
Yeah, there's been a lot of COVID-related issues this weekend in the NFL. Pittsburgh and Baltimore, a game that was supposed to be played this past Thursday on Thanksgiving, it still hasn't been played, Matt, and it was supposed to be scheduled for tomorrow. It's been postponed again. We're going to get some Wednesday night football, Steelers and Baltimore coming up.
We're not getting Wednesday night football. That game has to be postponed. This is ridiculous.
It's scheduled for 1:40 p.m. on Wednesday. So I'm all for any sort of weekday on a business day, afternoon matinee sporting event. And to tell me that it's going to be NFL on a matinee time slot on a workday, sign me up. I'm in for that. And then also the Saints, they were fine. They lost a draft pick. Because
that one I have a problem with.
The post-game celebration, I'm with you on that. The losing draft picks, the Raiders had this happen to them earlier in the season. That's uncalled for. You shouldn't be losing draft picks over a post-game celebration where masks weren't worn. I think that's a bit excessive.
It is excessive because the testing is so thorough in the NFL. If you make it to game day and you get inside the stadium, which in a lot of these cases there's no fans, I feel like you've done your part. At that point, wearing a mask on the sideline for a coach, I mean, you should probably do that. But if you have even gotten to that point, then I think you're in the clear. And especially post-game in the locker room, I feel like if everyone in that locker room is tested negative, then you're good to go in that space. That seems excessive to me. And again, I just come back to this. All week long, you're tested. If you get to game day and you're good to go, then I feel like once you enter the stadium, that is a safe space, a bubble-like atmosphere. You're good to go. The NBA didn't do this. The people in the bubble.
Yeah, good point. Good point. And the NFL's got to get some of this stuff tightened up, because losing draft picks, I think that is completely unnecessary for these teams to be handling this in something that's just unprecedented. We're all learning through this together and navigating it. So to hit these teams with draft picks feels a little bit unwarranted. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll get to some MVPs for the evening. We'll dish out those coming up next here on KSL's Unrivaled, powered by KSLSports.com.
Welcome back into KSL's Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports. It's Matt Biamonte and Mitch Harper. We do Cougar Sports Saturday each and every Saturday from noon to 3, and we're filling in for Alex Keery and Scott Mitchell. Been a good show so far. Glad to be here, as always. And I love Mondays, Mitch, for a couple of reasons. One, I mean, especially this time of year, there's so many different sports going on. You just get to absorb sports all weekend. I love that. And then it makes this next segment a little easier because there's a few more options to choose from. And it's the part of the show, Mitch, where KSL's Unrivaled, we give out our MVPs.
KSL's Unrivaled. The Unrivaled MVP. Scott and Alex crown tonight's most valuable player. According to Scott.
Uh-huh.
According to Alex.
Most valuable player.
Start with you, Mitch. Who is your MVP from the weekend?
I think this one's pretty easy, Matt. I think there's only one option because there's only been one individual. There's been one story in college football that's actually had national appeal, and that's the story of Sarah Fuller this past weekend, the Vanderbilt kicker, first ever woman to play in a Power 5 football game. Pretty awesome stuff. Now, Vanderbilt is downright terrible, and they couldn't give her the opportunity to actually attempt a PAT or attempt a field goal. They got shut out against Missouri, but she had the opportunity to complete a kickoff to open the second half. It was a squib kick, and she made history. She was named co-special teams player of the week in the SEC. It's just a really cool story because, you know, Vanderbilt needed her to play this past week, and it wasn't some publicity stunt for a winless team because it had that feeling at first when you looked at it at surface level. You're thinking, is this some PR stunt? But no, like they approached her. She was booting kicks, apparently, when they tried her out, and she embraced it. And I think it highlights, too, you know, that women can go into these spaces where they're male-dominated and succeed and be leaders and be voices. Like I was reading some stories about not only was she, you know, in the second half, she had that kickoff. In the halftime locker room, she was kind of being vocal and saying, hey, we got to show some more life, get a little more vocal. And she was part of the Vanderbilt team that won the SEC championship in women's soccer. So clearly a winner, clearly someone that's a leader in society. Like, I just thought it was a really cool story. And I was a little bit frustrating, too, to see on social media, some pockets of social media. You're going to get that. I know it's social media sometimes can be it's not real life at all. Like it's not a barometer for the real world at all. And yep. It can create a cesspool of terrible opinions. But it was just like, how can you get upset about this awesome story? I just thought it was a really cool thing in college football because this sport has taken a lot of hits this year. It hasn't been the greatest of seasons, but to see her have that moment, I hope she continues to play and get better and hopefully get some opportunities to actually attempt some field goal kicks because I just thought that was a really cool moment and to see that, like, hey, women can be you know, leaders and have success in fields that are male-dominated. I just thought it was a really cool thing. So my MVP, cut and dry, it's clear. Sarah Fuller, she gets my MVP. That was a pretty easy one. What about you?
Yeah, that's a great choice. And I one thing, too, is there were so many female athletes that reached out to her from soccer and other sports just saying what an inspiration that is. And you have a daughter, Mitch. I don't yet. You know, maybe down the road I'd like to see that happen. But, yeah, I think it's just awesome that young girls and parents can point to this and say, look, anything can happen. And I think that's a powerful thing in today's day and age. So, that was a great choice, Mitch.
And it got people to actually have an interest in Missouri versus Vanderbilt. Like, I was tuning into that game during our show to, like, flip back and forth. I was like, is she going to get a kick? Is she going to get a field goal? Because it was, like, it was just cool. It's cool to see history. I remember back in the day when BYU was in the Mountain West Conference and there was a kicker, Katie Hyenda. I believe that was the pronunciation. She was on New Mexico. So there's been other female D1 players in college football, but Sarah Fuller was the first at the Power 5 level because, of course, we know, Matt, that, you know, Group of 5 football doesn't exist compared to Power 5 football, right, Matt?
Don't. Let's not go
I know. I'm just preparing everyone. I'll tell you, if I had to give a vote to who's not my MVP, it's the College Football Playoff Committee. But I digress.
Barta is not getting your vote?
Yeah, he is not my MVP, Gary Barta, from the Playoff Committee. What about you, though, Matt? Who's your MVP for the night?
Yeah, there was a couple ways I could have went with this. Tempting to go with Kendall Hinton, who filled in for Denver, and even though he had more turnovers than completions, it was just an inspiring story, and a guy that was doing sales a month ago. Sales.
Unreal.
And then, I mean, if it never pans out for him, the guy started a NFL football game at quarterback. Very few people get to say that. But I'm actually going with Trevor Lawrence. Welcome back to college football, Trevor. He had a phenomenal game. And the reason I'm giving him the MVP is we're starting to see people drop off. Is it Perriman from Minnesota, I think?
Bateman,
that's it. Bateman opted out from Minnesota, and there was an offensive lineman from Texas. These teams that aren't having the years that they thought they would, some of their NFL hopefuls are dropping off, and that's fine. And it's understandable why they're doing it, but I just love the messaging from Trevor Lawrence, where everyone thinks he's going to go pro, and he probably will, but after the game, he said, I love Clemson. I love the people. If this was the last game here, it was a good one to go out on. But there's a lot of ifs there, and I'm not saying he's coming back. I'd be surprised if he came back. But this is a guy who, after he tested positive for COVID-19, he could have said, you know what? I got to get ready for the NFL. But it's been the complete opposite. And in the day and age, Mitch, where so many people don't appreciate college sports, it's nice that someone of Trevor Lawrence's stature loves college football. The guy loves playing for Clemson. He loves Clemson University. He was one of the foremost people at the front from the players at the beginning of the season that said, we want to play. Let us play football. And it's just so refreshing to have someone with as much clout as Trevor Lawrence does, because he's the face of college football, Mitch. Justin Fields is great, but he's not Trevor Lawrence. And Trevor Lawrence, if he was healthy, they beat Notre Dame. He probably was the Heisman. I mean, this dude is college football, and he wants to play. He loves playing college football. And, again, I think he's going pro, but it's not out of the realm of possibility he comes back. I mean, if you look at the Jets, do you want to play for the Jets? I mean, go back to college. No, I'm kidding. When you're the number one pick, you probably got to go. But it's just so refreshing, and to see him come back and play the way he did. I mean, he was phenomenal against Pitt, and I just love that there's someone of his stature with his ability that loves college football. I love college football. I love the universities and the pageantry, and it's nice that someone like him feels the same way.
Yeah, I think that's a great pick, Matt, because – and if you're – these NFL teams, I mean, he's been considered a number one pick for literally two or three years. Like his first year at Clemson, he was viewed as a potential number one overall pick. He's just been that heralded of a prospect for so many years now. But he's never shied away from competition. You like that about a guy, because I remember a few years ago, it was Jadeveon Clowney, a defensive end, South Carolina. He's had a good NFL career. He's been a good player, bounced around a bunch of different teams. But I remember that his final year before he declared for the draft, it was like, I don't know if I'm going to play. Like, a lot of people were saying, like, should he play? Should he not? You know, whereas Trevor Lawrence has made it clear, like, I'm playing. I'm competing. And you like that because, like you said, it could be easy just to bounce and get out of this thing and just opt out and go compete for the draft. If I was him too, I would make sure to pull a John Elway or an Eli Manning and say, I am not playing for the New York Jets, because he should declare for the draft because he's going to be a number one pick. But he should make sure to use his leverage to say, I'm not going to play for the Jets, though, because they are ruining guys. Like, Sam Darnold was as sure of a thing in the NFL as they coming out of USC, and he might be out of the league in a couple years. He's terrible with the Jets. They're 0-11. Yeah, hopefully for Trevor Lawrence, he can end up in a better spot than, say, the Jets, because you'd hate to see a guy that just seems like a genuinely good person be destroyed by being in a toxic environment like the Jets.
Yeah, and you know who he reminds me of a little bit? Zion Williamson, who, you know, he had that shoe debacle, and it was like, oh, don't go. You got to go to the NBA. He's like, no,
that's
I love
a great
Duke.
Point.
I love Duke. I'm going to come back and play. Like, I just love these college athletes that embrace college football or college basketball, whatever college sport it is. It's such a small part of your life. I like people that look at it like, I'm going to maximize every second of it because it's going to come and go like that.
And we're going to keep maximizing every second of our fill-in night here on Unrivaled. Yes. Coming up hour number two next, we'll get to the cut and Taysom Hill talk. Don't miss that. It's KSL's Unrivaled, powered by KSLSports.com. Welcome back in. KSL's Unrivaled. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Hour number two is underway. We're watching some Monday Night Football here in the studio. Well, I'm in the studio. Matt is at home. Usually it's a role reversal. Usually I'm the one on remote at home for Cougar Sports Saturday, and Matt's usually the one in studio. So it's nice to actually be here in Broadcast House. I haven't seen it in a few months, Matt.
I love being at Broadcast House. Wow, say that 10 times fast. Jeez.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah, I love being there. It's just comfortable. I mean, you got the beautiful Christmas decorations in there.
Oh, it's lovely in here.
It's phenomenal. I mean, being at home is nice, too. It's just, you know, I love being at Broadcast House. But, you know, having a here's the thing. If I'm being honest, here's the thing. So Saturday, I went to Broadcast House for the show. Then we went to the game. And I've got a six-week-old at home, and I felt like I would be completely sabotaging my wife by disappearing again. So I appreciate you and KSL for letting me be at home to kind of pitch in with some parenting.
Well, good stuff, man. And, yeah, you can see the live stream of all this festive Christmas decorations here in the studio on our KSLSports.com live news radio feed and on KSLNewsRadio.com. But we got to talk your favorite topic,
yes.
Matt. That is Taysom Hill, and he now... And that's where we're going to start things off in the 805 Cut, Taysom Hill Talk.
The Cut at 805. The unquestioned, undeniable, unrivaled. Top sports story of the hour. Here's what made the cut.
2-0. That's the record for Taysom through his first two career starts as an NFL starting QB. He gets it done for the Saints in a game where, you know, the Denver Broncos had a litany of issues at quarterback, and Taysom Hill steps in, does a nice job once again for Drew Brees, who's injured, still out nursing the ribs. Taysom's 2-0, Matt. How are you feeling about Taysom, and what grade? That's the poll of the question, poll of the night this evening that listeners can engage with us with. How would you grade Taysom Hill's performances the first two starts with the Saints? What would you say?
Well, for start number one, I would give him an A-, and for start number two, I'd give him a D+. That was a tough outing for Taysom Hill against Denver. Denver's defense is a lot better, and I'm sure the game plan changed a little bit, but what was really concerning to me, what I mean by concerning is they're winning games. So at the end of the day, he's doing exactly what he needs to do for the Saints football team, we talked with David Nixon on Saturday, Mitch, and David Nixon's a former BYU player. Taysom's wife is David's sister, and so he gave a great interview. You can go into our Cougar Sports Saturday feed and listen to it if you want. But he admits, and I think it's all easy and clear to understand, that this is his audition. This is his chance to prove to the Saints that he is worth giving the reins to next season. And he is he might be more than halfway through. If Drew comes back in 2 weeks, and he will have only started three games, I am of the belief, Mitch, that they're going to let, especially with the Saints winning, they're going to let Drew heal that extra week, because Philadelphia is not a good football team. You're seeing it on Monday Night Football right now. They're losing to the Seahawks. So I think Taysom's going to get four games. And right now he has one really solid, almost great performance, and this other one, it wasn't very good, and I think what really concerned me is he takes three sacks, and on all of those replays of the sacks, Mitch, there were open players. It just doesn't seem like he was able to read the defense nearly as well against Denver as Atlanta. Good news for Taysom, he's got Atlanta again, and this is going to be a really interesting test because they're going to prepare for Taysom. That first matchup, they weren't quite sure what they were looking for. Now they're going to have this opportunity to prepare for Taysom, and this is a really good opportunity for Taysom to show, when defenses know I'm the guy, here's what I can do. So I'm really looking forward to that. But he's only got one or two more opportunities, and he needs to have another statement like he did against Atlanta, I think, to really wow the Saints coaching staff, and he did not do that against Denver.
70% of you on our KSL Unrivaled Twitter feed, at KSL Unrivaled, are giving Taysom's first two starts a B grade. For me, I would say it's been a C so far, just because...
For both, or just the Denver game?
For total. I think that it's just been average. And I think maybe part of that is by design. Sean Payton said yesterday that the design, the game plan, changed significantly for the offense, for the Saints' offense and Taysom Hill, after they got intel about the Broncos' quarterback situation, and they changed the game plan to maybe kill more clock and make this thing... just get that game over and done with as quick as possible. But to me, I think that you still got to showcase Taysom Hill's ability and arm. And it was interesting after the game against you know, the Broncos yesterday. They go to the studio on Fox, and Tony Gonzalez is saying, well, you know, Taysom Hill did his thing, did his, you know, got his two quarterback touchdown runs. Like, that's what he does. He's a run-first guy. And I'm thinking, again, folks, Taysom Hill can pass the football. I watch it with my own two eyes. The man can throw the football. And I still have not been overwhelmed to think that, or just wowed to the point where I feel like Taysom is clearly showing that he is the guy. He's the quarterback of the future for the Saints. I still have this kind of air of caution that maybe the Saints will be in that market for a quarterback. Maybe a Zach Wilson. Who knows? Like, there's a lot of quarterbacks coming up in the NFL draft this year and that are going to be options. And the thing is, too, is not even in the draft, but you look at NFL QBs around the league that could potentially be on the market. You think about Matthew Stafford. You think, gosh, we could go on and on about some
Dak
of these.
Dak Prescott.
Yeah, Dak Prescott could be available. You know, maybe the Bears unload on Mitch Trubisky. I don't think he's an NFL starting quarterback anymore, but you never know. I mean, Dwayne Haskins. Yeah, Sam Darnold, Dwayne Haskins. I mean, there's a lot of potential, like, decent quarterbacks that are young that could be available on the market, and maybe the Saints go, you know, Drew Brees is retiring. You know, is Taysom the guy that's significantly better than a Matt Stafford who could come in and be a plug-and-play guy? I mean, I don't. We'll see. Like, it feels like Taysom should be the guy. I mean, Drew Brees loves Taysom Hill. Feels like Sean Payton loves Taysom Hill. He's given him this opportunity to start, but I just didn't get the sense that there was any real, there wasn't, the Taysom did not perform very well against Denver. I know that it was a run-heavy offensive game plan, give the ball to Kamara, get this thing down as quick as possible, and get out, and win the football game, and they did 31-3. But I'm not coming away feeling so far through 2 weeks that Taysom Hill is just saying, he's putting a stamp of approval, like, I am the guy. Folks, I have arrived. The next man is in the building. He's here. Your heir apparent after Drew Brees is right in front of you. I haven't got that feeling through the first 2 weeks.
Well, I think you would have in the first game, Mitch, if the touchdown to Emmanuel Sanders counted. There wasn't the holding penalty, and if he didn't fumble the football. Because his numbers then would have been 19-24, nearly 300 yards, a passing touchdown, no turnovers. You'd be like, this is the man. The Denver game, I think, you know, to come back to what I was saying earlier, his inability to read the defense, he takes those three sacks when guys are open, and then there were some questionable decisions he made. That pass to Jared Cook, he was lucky that thing wasn't picked off. And so I don't have a problem with him only attempting 16 passes. That's not the issue. It's not, oh, they don't trust him to throw. When you look at 16 pass attempts, that certainly speaks volumes to what the Saints thought they needed to do. It's the 56% completions. It's the interception. If his numbers were 13 of 16 for, let's say, 150 yards and no pick, we'd be having a very different conversation right now. We'd be talking about a guy who's doing everything he needs to do. He's putting himself in position to do that. And so the other thing that's also kind of stuck out to me is he does have the rushing touchdowns, but he has not been as elusive in the pocket as I thought he would be. You know, that's something you saw in the Chiefs-Patriots game where Mahomes, I mean, that play he made on the final drive, it might have been third down, actually. I think it was the third down play where he eludes the sack and he's getting out and he makes a play.
Yeah.
Taysom can do that, and for whatever reason, he's not getting out of the pocket very often, and he's not breaking the big runs on passing plays that break down. He did have that one touchdown run against the Falcons on a passing play that broke down, but he's taken six sacks in his two starts. I thought he would be way more elusive and not taking as many sacks as he's taken. And on one hand, let's give him some credit. He's really making an effort to stay in the pocket and throw the football. But at some point, let's bail and then make a play with your arm on the run outside of the pocket. Hopefully that happens in the next game or two.
Are the Taysom haters, are they being validated through 2 weeks, Matt? Because I know you are the guy that has been riding the train for Taysom Hill to be a future franchise quarterback in the NFL.
I'm the conductor of
you
the
are.
Train for KSL Sports. I've been beating that drum since over 2 years ago. But look, he's got one really good performance, one bad one. I'm not ready to jump off the train yet, but this Atlanta performance on the road is going to be very telling.
We'll get an update on Utah State football. Was having some telling issues up there in the Cache Valley. We'll get some thoughts on Taysom Hill from our own Jeremiah Jensen of KSL 5 TV coming up next here on KSL's Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports. Welcome back in. KSL's Unrivaled. Mitch Harper, Matt Biamonte from Cougar Sports Saturday filling in for Alex Carey and Scott Mitchell. Appreciate those guys giving us the chance to step in on this Monday evening. We're watching some Monday Night Football. Eagles and Seahawks in action. Alex's Seattle Seahawks up right now on the Eagles, who have just been a mess. Carson Wentz, I don't know how he's still the starting quarterback for Philadelphia. It feels like Doug Peterson just keeps clinging on to Carson Wentz because he's the guy that he's linked to, and his success hinges on Wentz. I don't get it. Seahawks right now up 14-9 on the Eagles. We'll keep checking in on that game. I also don't understand what's going on with Utah State football this season. It's been a mess up in the Cache Valley. And to talk more about the Aggies, the NFL, locals in the NFL, joined now by KSL 5 TV's Jeremiah Jensen at JJ Sportsbeat on Twitter. Jeremiah, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. And you want to know why Carson Wentz is still the starter in Philadelphia?
Why is he that?
Money.
Yeah.
How much money are they paying him? The Eagles want to get something back for their investment. They also, you know, picked him pretty high in the draft, right? So
number two.
There you go. So that's all you need to know about why he's getting a longer leash than most quarterbacks in the NFL.
Isn't that so frustrating in the NFL? Like, it's sometimes great for our locals in the NFL. We like seeing those guys get the chance. But the money trail always ultimately determines who plays or their draft stock. It's like, just play the best 11 on the field. I've never understood that. Like, money be dang, like, just play the best guys. I don't get it.
You don't think there's politics in the NFL either?
I know, but it's just like there's 53 guys on a roster. They're giving it their all to compete, and you're hitching your wagon to a quarterback that is failing. It just never makes sense.
The NFL is no different than how the rest of the world works, unfortunately.
Sadly, I agree, JJ, but you make the big bucks. You got to give us some answers on Utah.
Is that how this is? Oh, so the expectations are so high because I make so much money, which is not true, by the way.
Well,
so you're putting a lot of pressure on me, even though that pressure is not justified.
JJ, we want to get some updates from Utah State with you because, you know, the Aggies. Today, there's a story up on KSLSports.com right now. One of their top running backs, Jaylen Warren, entering the transfer portal. This coming after a weekend where they had a win. The Aggies actually got a win, the first one under interim head coach Frank Miley. What's going on with Utah State? Is it bottoming out even farther?
Well, I mean, it's kind of strange. We're talking about all these things after they got a nice win.
Right.
And their quarterback showed a lot of potential. I thought Peasley was great. Look, you have to take it for a grain of salt, though. They're playing New Mexico. New Mexico is one of the worst teams in the country. But you know what? If you're a Utah State fan, if you're Utah State players and coaches, you take a win how you can get it. But look, clearly there's some issues going on in Logan. The Gary Anderson era, the second era, I should say, was a disaster, to be blunt. And we're seeing the fallout right now. And this is what happens everywhere when coaches are changed, right? So it's just weird because it's mid-season. So you look at a lot of coaching changes throughout the country, even here locally, BYU, Utah, whenever it is, you're going to see a lot of turnover, players transferring, leaving the program. A lot of times they come into a program because of a certain coach that recruited them or the head coach. So it's just weird and blunt seeing it happen mid-season. Now, clearly there's some issues there. I'm not privy to all of them. There was a little bit that came out with Jason Shelley's departure. Frank Miley said that he didn't do anything. He's a great young man. He didn't break any rules. He didn't do anything illegal. It just sounds like there was just a difference in where they wanted to go with the program, and he decided to that he was going to tell them to go find another opportunity, I guess. So, but it's just, I think if this was happening in January, it wouldn't be as alarming.
Yeah.
It's more alarming because it's happening, and obviously this year is just weird. It's happening mid-season, so that's why it's so stark. I don't think there's anything too crazy and wild here, but clearly there is a lot of work to be done up in Logan to get that program back to where they were just 2 years ago, winning 11 games and being nationally ranked.
What direction do you think they should go with that head coach position? It's still open. The search is still going on. John Hartwell, the AD, wants to have a national search. Do you think they should go with kind of a young up-and-coming guy, or should they have like a flashy name that's well-known in college football circles that's maybe a little bit of a retread, if you will? What direction would you say they should
go? Well, hopefully they learn the lesson because they just took door number two that you mentioned with Gary Anderson, and it was, I mean, I'm going to be blunt, that was a booster hire.
Yeah.
and they wanted to revisit the glory years that Gary had when he was there the first time. And this was not the same Gary Anderson as far as a coach goes. And, you know, it didn't go well. So, yes, look for a young up-and-coming coach. Look, I've been saying it publicly when asked. I think Jay Hill would be a home run hire for the Utah State Aggies. Now, does Jay want to leave Weber State where he's built a great program? I feel like Jay wants to see that out. I think he wants to try to win an FCS championship. But I think it would be pretty hard for him to pass up an FBS coaching opportunity where he doesn't have to move. So that would be really tempting. So I think, but I think Jay Hill is the perfect coach for what Utah State is looking for. The way things have gone the last year and a half, they need a program builder again to come in there and build something new and fresh and energize that program and put a lot of this negativity that's happened in the last few months behind them. And I think that Jay Hill would be very capable of doing that. And Jay Hill still, you know, obviously he's got a lot of experience now, but still, as far as coaches go relative to other coaches, young, up-and-coming, ambitious coach that can go in there and get the job done the right way.
JJ, Utah's 0-2, first time since 2007. Where do you think it's gone wrong for them up to this point, and what can they fix to get a win against Oregon State?
Turnovers. They turn the ball over so much in these first two games. What was it, 6 in the first game against USC? Yeah. And then the turnovers against Washington were just absolute killers. And so if you're Utah and you're looking at why did we not compete better against USC? Why were we put in all these tough situations? And then against Washington, why did things collapse in the second half? Well, you can't fumble the ball at the 20-yard line. You can't throw interceptions at key moments of the game. And that's what happened to Utah against Washington. So I know the quarterback is a grad transfer senior, but everybody around him is young. Ty Jordan, freshman, made a freshman mistake, but he's also showing a lot of potential. You go on the defensive side of the ball, and you see how that defense performed in the first half, shutting out Washington. And then obviously they got a lot of things to learn about playing 60 minutes instead of just 30. So you can go around and you can see there's so many positive things that Utah did in these first two games, but it's not enough to win games yet, and that's showing their youth. And I think if you're a Utah fan, you're kind of you want to be critical and frustrated that you're losing, but then again, you're seeing all these great young players that are getting experience. And so I guess if you're going to have a down year like this and you're going to make these mistakes, have it be in a year where COVID-19 has already ravaged your season anyway.
Yeah, it kind of is, honestly, it is the perfect situation for Utah to have a down year,
yeah.
Because, what, a 5-game season? Like, it really, in the grand scheme of things. And
well, down to 4 now, right? I mean, they yeah. can only have – they after Oregon State, they have 2 road games left, and then they're done.
It's so bizarre. It just doesn't make sense. Talk with Jeremiah Jensen here for a few more moments from KSL 5 TV. Our poll of the question tonight, JJ, I want to get your thoughts on this. How would you grade Taysom Hill, going back to the NFL, how would you grade Taysom Hill's first 2 starts as an NFL starting quarterback? Matt and I have kind of had mixed opinions here tonight. How would you say? Would you give it an A, B, C, or a fail? What would you say?
I'll give you 2 grades, because I thought the first game, I'd give him an A-. I thought he was terrific. I probably would have gave him an A if he didn't fumble on that long run.
Yeah.
I thought he was, you know, first start. Look, you know, you're playing against a team you should have blown out anyway, but I thought he was really solid. I thought he threw the ball really well. I didn't throw the ball as well on Sunday against the Broncos. Yes, that was a weird game, but I probably got to go C+, because I felt like he could have done a lot more in the pass game and didn't. Look, he ran for 50 yards. I mean, you're going to expect that from him, but in order for him to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, I think he's got to be better throwing the football. He was great throwing the football in the first game, not as good in the second game. So that's how I would grade him out in those 2 games. And I imagine that he would probably agree, and he wants to do, was he 7 of 16 in that game? I mean, I don't think that's where he wants to be as an NFL quarterback. And so I think he would probably wouldn't mind giving himself that grade either. And I think you're going to see him improve in that area in the next week or so.
Well, JJ, before we get out, what's on tap tonight on SportsBeat?
Well, Dennis Lindsay spoke today as the Jazz begin training camp. His thoughts on why they brought back Derek Favors and just how many teams out there wanted Jordan Clarkson. Mitch, you guys are both Laker fans. You know Jordan Clarkson, so you know how much of a demand there may have been for him. So we'll find out just how much come on up tonight at 10.
Well, thanks as always, JJ. We appreciate it. Crazy to think we're 2 weeks away till NBA preseason getting
it's
going.
It's
crazy times in 2020, I tell you, but we always appreciate you. JJ, have a great time tonight on Sports Beat. We got to take a break, though. On the other side, we'll get to an NFL roundup. This is KSL Unrivaled, powered by KSL Sports.
KSL's Unrivaled, the Unrivaled NFL Roundup. Premium grade-A pro football stories from your two hosts, a former NFL quarterback and the other guy. It's the Unrivaled NFL Roundup.
Welcome back in. KSL's Unrivaled. It's the two other guys tonight.
The other guys.
Two other guys. One of my favorite movies.
Really? The Will Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg movie.
Yeah, I'll admit, I know you're a diehard movie guy, so this is a risky slope for me to go down this wormhole bringing up movies, but anything Will Ferrell, I'm a kind of a sucker for Will Ferrell movies. I love his comedy. He hasn't had much, though, lately, though, so I have to go with some of the older ones with Will Ferrell. But NFL Roundup, we're going to get to it here. It's always a fun fixture here on the program, getting a roundup of all the latest news in the National Football League here on KSL's Unrivaled, and some coaching carousel moves in the NFL. The Detroit Lions, they've fired Matt Patricia, another former Bill Belichick coach, getting canned in the National Football League. What do you make of the Lions moving on from Matt Patricia, Matt?
It makes sense. I just hate the timing of these. They just I don't know how it benefits the football team to fire someone mid-season. Maybe there's a spark of energy and kind of interesting who's filling in. Darrell Bevell, the former Seahawks offensive coordinator, and he's had some connections to BYU as well, but be interested to see who they fill in there. I don't love them firing him at this point, but oh, well, I think the thing that's really interesting, though, Mitch, is you bring up another Belichick disciple that doesn't pan out. And just because you work with someone that's great doesn't mean you're going to be great. And I think a lot of times these NFL franchises look at a guy and say, we got to get someone from the Patriots. They're just so good. When in reality, you should just say, well, let's get the best guy for us and have an open interview process. But NFL's done a really terrible job at that over the years, and teams that fall into that trap have coaching issues like Detroit.
Yeah, it's amazing. Every year, it hits you like a cinder block. Like on Thanksgiving, the Detroit Lions, how inept they've been as a franchise. Because just every Thanksgiving, they're in that huge spotlight game. Everyone's watching it. Everyone's at home for the holiday. Even more so this year. And the Lions, just how bad they've been in an era of NFL free agency where it feels like every bad franchise has at least 1 year. Like the Jacksonville Jaguars 2 years ago, was it? They were in the AFC Championship game. But the Lions just can never get it right. It doesn't matter. And, I mean, we should say they did get it right for a little bit when our guy Scott Mitchell was quarterbacking the team. We should say that. Editor's note. But, no, I mean, just the Lions just been bad. It's unreal how that franchise, they've got one playoff win since 1958. How does that happen? Like, you had Barry Sanders once upon a time. You had incredible, one of the greatest running backs to ever play this game, and you just have nothing to show for it. And time again, the Lions have had nothing to show for it. I mean, Matt Stafford is a pretty dang good quarterback when you look at his stats, and they've done nothing with him.
Megatron, played there.
Yeah, great point. Calvin Johnson, like, just ups and ends his career out of nowhere and says, I'm good, deuces, not coming back, I'm out, y'all. Like, it's amazing to me how the Lions, in a landscape of the NFL where it feels like at some point everyone's going to have a year where they just rise up. Like, you're going to have the dynasties, you're going to have the Patriots, with their heyday with Tom Brady, there's going to be those exceptions, those outliers that just are always great. But the Lions, they're just always bad. And even the Browns this year are good. Like, it's just the Lions can never figure it out. And I feel like Matt Patricia was a little bit of arrogant, too arrogant for the position, and thought that, oh, just because I was a Belichick disciple, that means that I'm just going to be good. And clearly not the case. And COVID restrictions continue to play a part in the NFL landscape. The San Francisco 49ers, the Santa Clara County, where their stadium is at, Levi Stadium, they banned sporting activities from taking place in that county for the next 3 weeks, leaving the San Francisco 49ers to move So they're going to be playing their games in week 13 and 14, which were supposed to be in San Francisco. They're going to be played now in Arizona. What is Santa Clara County doing, Matt? It makes no sense that they're booting this professional team to say, hey, get out of here and go down to Arizona, whereas the state of Arizona is like, hey, yeah, you can come down with open arms.
I love the state of California, but there's no way I could live there. I mean, these decisions are mind-boggling because last I checked, there has been thousands of sporting events that have been played, and to my albeit limited knowledge and intelligence, Mitch, I don't remember any outbreaks from any of these games being played. And I just don't think that this is the type of thing that needs to be targeted to help reduce COVID-19. A lot of these teams, especially in the state of California, they haven't been playing with fans. And so the protocols are great in the NFL, and if you can get to a point where you play a football game, you feel, 99% sure that there's not going to be an outbreak from that game being played? It doesn't make sense. And here's the thing that's so infuriating, though, about the state of California right now. So you hear all these things, and recently they closed down restaurants again, and then the politicians are photographed eating in restaurants. It's just very frustrating.
Yeah, it really is. And I feel bad for the 49ers, like, to suddenly have to upend their operations and go to Arizona, because after yesterday, they beat the Rams, pulled off an upset win, so they still mathematically have a little bit of a shot to get into the wild card potentially in the NFC race. And these are professional athletes. They can handle a lot of things coming their way. It messes up routines. It messes up a lot of different things for guys. But hey, they got to go down to Arizona and make it work. And kind of just the 2020 calendar is just bizarre. It's just so strange what we've seen, but we should always pretty much expect the unexpected, it feels like, in 2020. The Chicago Bears, their head coach Matt Nagy, challenged his team to, quote, wake up and also, quote, have some personal pride in the wake of Sunday's disastrous 41-25 primetime loss to the Green Bay Packers, which you saw on KSL 5 TV. Man, taking the personal route with calling out his players. I kind of like that move. Like, sometimes these NFL athletes, they get these big money deals, and sometimes they just don't put out the effort. I don't mind this. What about you?
I don't mind it. It's not going to change the results. The problem in Chicago is not players taking responsibility. The problem is they don't have any talent at quarterback. Nick Foles, his window came and went. I don't love any of their running backs, and Allen Robinson is nice, but they don't have – is there any position on the offensive side of the ball for Chicago where they have anyone that you would consider an above-average player at that position?
No.
No, exactly.
Like, that's why I emphasize the no, because the they don't.
So he can call them out all day long. They're just not talented enough. They don't have the right quarterback. They don't have – And you don't have to have the right quarterback because teams have won Super Bowls before with average quarterbacks. I mean, the Ravens with Trent Dilfer. No offense to Trent. I just don't think that he was, one of the best quarterbacks ever to play. But if you have elite talent at other positions, you can get the job done. And that's just not the situation that Chicago is in.
Yeah, the risky part about making a move like this when you're a head coach is then your management, your bosses then go, well, you're the one leading this team. Why didn't you get this team having some pride maybe in the offseason, going into the season, throughout the entire year? You shouldn't be getting to this point. Like, it's always sound the alarm when you hear a team go, yeah, we had a players-only meeting, or we hear a coach say, show some pride, calling out his players in a press conference. It's always like, well, yeah, sound the alarm. There's some issues with that team, and definitely there's a lot of problems going on with the Chicago Bears. We'll take a break and wrap up the show. Zach Wilson, NFL draft stock continues to rise. How high is it going? We'll talk about that next here on KSL's Unrivaled. Welcome back in. KSL's Unrivaled. Mitch Harper and Matt Biamonte. Having a great show filling in for Alex Curry and Scott Mitchell on this fine Monday evening. Wherever you're listening, we appreciate you spending your Monday night with us. If you missed any part of the show, download the KSL Sports app and go subscribe to this podcast. KSL's Unrivaled, Cougar Sports Saturday, Cougar Tracks, all the podcasts, Crimson Corner, they're all there on the KSL Sports app, so go check that out today. Matt, we got to get to the two-minute drill. And I was talking in the break with producer Jeremy Moss, and I was like, how does Scott always describe the two-minute drill? It's always every single time. Like, I don't know if you've hosted with Scott very often, but every time he describes it, it's like the same vernacular. Like, it's to the T, Scott does it. So the only way I can describe it, Matt, is in the words of Robert and I, is we're going to go fast and we're going to go hard and we're going to break down a lot of stories. Sound good?
Sounds great. I was literally going to say, I don't know what this is or how to describe it, but I love it. And it's music I love as well. Fun quick story, Mitch.
Okay.
So I'm sure you're aware, as a parent of three, but you don't want your newborns taking naps late at night. You don't want to keep them up all night.
Yes.
And my son was dead asleep a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, I got to wake him up. How am I going to wake him up? Busted out this exact music, NFL Films, blaring it through the house. He wouldn't wake up.
Your poor wife. Did she just say, like, why are you firing up the NFL Films music again? I swear, every week I'm hearing you describe some situation where you're playing ESPN music, you're watching a game from a BYU season in 2004. Like, what are you doing, man?
Hey,
your poor wife.
Goes, hey, I watched The Bachelorette with her, and she has to tolerate NFL Films.
Fair enough. And you know what? We could tolerate the thought of Zach Wilson maybe being the number two overall pick. Did you see this, Matt?
I did.
Dane Brugler, he's got a mock draft out, and he's got Zach Wilson from BYU going number two overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Is this legit smoke, you think, or is this just something where an analyst is putting out there to see a reaction? I mean, what do you make of this?
It's absolutely legit for a couple reasons. One, who's in the number two spot, Mitch? Jacksonville. The Jaguars have been known to do some crazy things. And number two, this just seems to happen every year where some guy, for no reason, shoots up a draft board and you're wondering what's going on. Now, Zach has had a great year, but would you take him in front of Justin Fields? I mean, I wouldn't if I was running an NFL team. I think Zach Wilson is going to be a good to great NFL quarterback. He's got all the potential in the world. He deserves to be in the first round discussion. But number two? This is getting out of control.
I mean, I'm all for it. I'm here for this ride. Like, I want to see it happen. Like, put him at number one. Like,
in front of Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence is boycotting the Jets. Zach Wilson to the Jets. Let's do this thing.
Don't wish that upon Zach Wilson, please.
Honestly, Matt, I almost feel like, you know, I feel like it still hasn't been officially announced that Zach Wilson has announced his intentions, what he's going to do after this season. So that has to play out first, but I wonder if he does declare, it seems like it would be a good reason too, especially if there's forecasts out there that he's going to go number two overall, for goodness sake. But I kind of want to see him maybe go in the back end of the first round, because then you're going to a franchise where the weight of the franchise is not on your shoulders in year one. Maybe you can learn from a veteran. Maybe you can learn from some seasoned players that have had obviously some success being in the back half of the first round. It could get really risky when you get in that top five. Like, I think Zach Wilson is good enough to be a top five talent. I do. I just think that he's got endless potential, and I think he's only going to get better in his football career. I think some of his best football is still ahead of him. I know it's crazy because he's been darn near perfect for BYU this year, but I feel like number two, that caught me off guard. I'm not going to lie.
I thought
that was a little bit high at this juncture, but I'm here for the ride. I want to see this thing continue to roll. The Sun Bowl, looking at the college football postseason, has announced that they are canceling its postseason game. First time the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, yeah, that's the sponsor name. First time since 1935 the Sun Bowl is getting canned. And that means it's the third Pac-12 bowl game with Pac-12 tie-ins that's been canceled this season. Is there going to be enough bowl spots for the Pac-12 this year?
Probably not. I think this is just the I don't want to be so casual about it, but it's a lot of these sponsors, do they want to shell out that kind of money to put on a bowl game in which maybe there's not a lot of fans, if any at all? You know who I feel the most sad for, though, Mitch, is the players of teams that would have went to this bowl and then maybe they don't get to go to a bowl game at all. And I know the fans look at the bowl system and say it's stupid, let's expand the playoffs, it's dumb, bowl games are dumb. I think bowl games for players, I think players love going to bowl games, and I think it's such a nice payoff to you go to these venues, and there's a whole week. I mean, think about BYU in the Hawaii Bowl last year. You get to go to Hawaii, you have some fun, you get some swag, you play in a game. I think it's great for college football players to have that reward at the end of a year, and they're not going to get it. And I think this is just a forecast of things to come.
Yeah, the college football postseason is going to be far different than it's been in years past. All these extravagant bowl weeks are going to be now probably 48-hour, you know, weekend stays in a city, and then get in, get out, and then play your game. And that's life in 2020 with COVID-19 until we see a vaccine try to get us back to some normalcy in our society. In basketball, former Utah Ute and number one overall NBA draft pick Andrew Bogut announced that he is retiring from pro hoops. Bogut, he had a solid NBA career, played with the Bucks, played with the Warriors. He won a title with Golden State, and he makes it official he's retiring from the professional ranks.
You know what I loved about his career, too, especially with the Warriors, is some people, especially first-round picks, think that I've got to be something that I'm not. Like, you saw this with Dwight Howard for a long, long time where he just wouldn't adapt. Andrew Bogut adapted from day number one. What do you need me to be? I'm going to be that. He was a phenomenal center for the Warriors. He had a great NBA career. And, you know, was he a superstar? No. But, you know, he lasted a long time, won some championships. To me, that is a definition of a great career.
Man, I love those matchups back in the day with BYU and Utah. Bogut versus Rafael Araujo. Those are some fun matchups in the post back in the heyday of the old Mountain West Conference back then. So tip of the cap to Andrew Bogut on a career well done in professional basketball. Back to college football, Texas head coach Tom Herman trying to keep focus on players and not his job status. Now, there's some rumors swirling down there in Texas, and no program loves a coaching search rumor more than the Texas Longhorns. I swear, like, that program lives for just saying they're going to fire a coach and then starting these rumors. But a lot of people trying to suggest down there that Urban Meyer should be the play down in Texas. And Tom Herman's even addressed some of those rumors about, you know, Urban Meyer and saying, hey, we got to focus on the players at hand and what's going on down there. But do you think Texas could actually pull the plug on Tom Herman this early?
Oh, yeah.
You think
Texas,
so?
Texas is way too impatient. And I wouldn't do it if I was making the decision. I think it's too soon. He hasn't even really gotten to the bulk of his recruiting classes yet. So it's been disappointing a little bit, but, I mean, they still have been going to bowl games and have been winning seasons. They just haven't reached the heights that Texas wants to. And Urban Meyer is a phenomenal coach. I don't blame anyone for going after him, but he does not stay in places very long. So you kind of have to
wait. I'd take 3 years with Urban hands down. Like, that guy's going to get you a natty, like, guaranteed. Right? Would you take Urban if you're Texas? Like, if you knew you could get Urban right now today, if you're Texas, would you fire Herman and get Urban immediately? You'd have to do that, right? If you knew if Urban committed,
I mean, you probably have to do it. But does Texas want to just win a national championship and then go back to being this? I think Texas wants to be a premier program, and you're not going to do that by having someone come in for 3 years and then leave. You'll be back in the situation in a couple years.
Do you think Urban will actually get back into coaching, though? Because I feel like Texas and USC are the two spots that could actually maybe pull it off, and he'd be interested in coming back. Because I don't see him coming back to the SEC or the Big Ten. It feels like USC and Texas are the only two spots that could do it. But I almost, at the same time, like, I see him on Fox, and he seems to be loving life as an analyst.
Yeah, I don't think he will. Ohio State, I think, is one of the places he wanted to be, and he left that. So I think he's done.
Yeah, well, I think we're done. Now, Matt, it's been a great night. Big tip of the cap to you, sir, for filling in with me here on KSL's Unrivaled. Big shout-out to Alex Curry and Scott Mitchell for letting us have the chance to fill in tonight. Hope you all enjoyed it. Download the KSL Sports app and go check out the podcast if you missed any part of this show. Coming up tomorrow, 7 to 9, KSL's Unrivaled, back on the air. Take care. Have a good night.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.